So we'll talk later in the hour about where we are with COVID in New Zealand, but where are we with the vaccines some people are hesitant to take? And as for societies opening up, that's a story still in the telling. New Zealander Dr. Gary McLean joins us again on Sunday morning. Gary is a professor in molecular immunology at London Metropolitan University and a researcher with Imperial College. He's an international authority on coronaviruses. Good evening to you, Gary. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. Good morning to you all there in New Zealand.
Well, the UK is said to have a new strain of Delta, and of course any new COVID strains is what the world dreads. It's reckoned to be a bit more infectious and even the reason the UK is in a bad place with COVID right now. Is that correct?
Well, it's possible. I suspect the main reason for the case increases we've been seeing over the last while now is the lack of meaningful control measures. Everything was basically thrown out the window a while ago. It was Freedom Day. We could go about business as normal. So I think, and that's really, those cases are probably being driven by the existing Delta variant, which we know transmits really, really well. Basically, we've got people behaving like it was the pre-pandemic times. Lots of young people getting the virus in schools. They pass it on to others through family contact. We've got workers going back to the offices after a long period away. So coupled with the vaccine immunity, giving people a sense of protection, and we know it does reduce hospitalization and death very well. There's a bit of complacency that tends to set in. But we know this immunity from the vaccines is not completely stopping the virus from circulating. And that's where we are right now. The new lineage, the frequency, rather disturbingly, has gone up recently in the UK. It's about 6% of cases. And so I'm a little worried that any variant that can outrun the existing Delta, it must have an advantage, and we're going to probably see that go up in the future. So we're watching that in the next period of time.
Yeah, I saw the headline in the journal Nature, COVID vaccine makers brace for a variant worse than Delta. How likely is it, though, that a new escape variant would arrive that is as much of a game changer as Delta has been?
Well, it is a real possibility that we get a new game-changing variant. The emergence of yet another more transmissible strain wouldn't be great. I think everyone would agree with that. We've had enough of these things. But it is possible, given the immune pressure on the virus. There's a lot more people getting immunity now. And some countries like the UK with this sustained circulation. And so this new variant, it's a good example of how the virus goes about that. We know the virus accumulates mutations. It's what it does. It's an RNA virus. It manages to alter the spike gene quite frequently. That gives it an advantage. But so far, what we're seeing with most of the variants is they don't really escape the immunity too badly. Usually the advantage they get is that they transmit better between people. That's why we see the case numbers going up quite a lot in certain countries. So we'll just have to wait and see what's going to happen. I think it's a possibility, but you know, there's a point where the virus can't change anymore, and we might be getting close enough to that wall, if you like.
Cross fingers. You see, the UK is well ahead of New Zealand getting the eligible population fully vaxxed, but it's slow now, isn't it, where you are? And I ask that because, of course, New Zealand set a target of 90%, and we're wondering how long that'll take. There is that recalcitrant cohort of a population that's hard to reach wherever you are.
Yeah, we started off very well here with the vaccine rollout early this year. We managed to get pretty good rates of uptake. It is really slowing down, though, in recent times, because I think we're hitting that point where we've got most of the people. The numbers are about 86% of the over 12s have had one dose, 79% are fully jabbed. And we're seeing that to push those numbers up a little higher, it's really, really tough. The other problem is that now that those first people that got vaccinated early on in the year, let's say January, I think it was, they're past the point now where we know the immunity wanes. It's about 6 months. It tends to drop off about there. And so there's a big drive now to provide the boosters. That's moving along. Yeah. People are complaining that it's a bit too slow, but they're waiting for become eligible 6 months after your second jab. So far we've got 4.5 million people having had boosters. We've also started to jab the teenage group, the age 12 to 15 year group. And they're, as I mentioned earlier, the main drivers of these new infections currently. The kids, they pick up the virus at school. It passes very well through families, even though the kids don't tend to get sick. And I think getting those vaccination rates up to 90% is very, very difficult. It's hard to get over 85%. Those 15% of people that are hesitant or resistant for whatever reason, it's going to take a big effort for countries to get up above that 90% cutoff range, I think.
Dr. Ashley Bloomfield here says we'll have more vaccine choices to go with COVID. The Thames Coromandel mayor waiting for Novavax, Komatua and Murupara, says he and other local Māori don't want Pfizer. They're waiting for vaccines they think will be more effective. So, again, the effectiveness of Pfizer, please, seeing as that's being questioned now, Gary.
Well, Jim, I think Pfizer's one of the best, most efficacious vaccines out there for COVID. It's been around a long time. It's been given to millions and millions and millions of people. It works very well. We're consistently seeing it having efficacy up in the 90s, even with some of the newer variants that appeared, it was still managing to provide good protective immunity, and it works very, very well. There are those lingering questions, though, of the side effects and the longevity of protection, but that pretty much goes for any vaccine out there, not even the non-COVID ones. So I'm not sure that waiting for another vaccine platform or one that's made slightly differently is going to be useful during an outbreak or even in the middle of the pandemic right now. So I'd recommend getting on with what's available, provided, of course, it passes all the safety regulations and it has a benefit. And all of these vaccines do that. So I would just follow the health authority guidelines where you are and get the first one you can.
Yes, just slightly further to that, Business Insider reports, quoting the CDC in the United States, that the Janssen vaccine, which we're adding, is a bit weaker than the other vaccines. You do need two shots, not one, that Moderna has a slight edge over Pfizer. So just clarify, are these differences, they're not significant? Should people be holding out for the vaccine they think would be better for them because these differences are significant, or are they not really?
I mean, I think you can hold out if there's a medical reason why one vaccine platform is preferred or not recommended for them. So, for example, we had the AstraZeneca and the blood clots issue earlier. We've had the issues with Pfizer and myocarditis as well. And some people, unfortunately, are allergic to some of the components that are found in the vaccines. And so these differences in efficacy, they're relatively minor. It tends to be that the messenger RNA ones, Pfizer and Moderna, do seem to be the best as compared to the other platforms that are available. I think it's really important, though, to get as many people as possible immune quickly, and then you wait for the regular boosters and top-ups where the virus is still circulating. So then people can get back to relatively normal behavior, which is what we all want, and avoid any further lockdowns.
Indeed. As for the ongoing claim, Gary, that we simply don't know the long-term side effects of the vaccine, just to clarify this too, don't side effects usually show up within the first couple of months after vaccination? Isn't this the reason for the months that went by before authorization? And MedSafe here is really careful. So you're confident we know about side effects now, which are cited still, even the long-term ones?
Yes, I think that's true. The side effects show up early on. They've all been monitored very, very carefully. They're all very, very rare as well. And this was all done before all the approvals were made for these vaccines that are in existence. So I think that so many people have now received these vaccines, and it's for over a year that we know about the side effects and the long-term effects also. There's pretty much almost nothing, or very rarely, something negative coming out that suggests that these vaccines are not safe. I would suggest that it's largely the opposite, that they're really effective and quite useful and very, very safe.
It's worth restating. Just finally, Slate magazine's run a story saying if the immunocompromised were a state in the US, it'd be the fifth largest. A lot of people are immunocompromised, and the vaccines are not helping all of them. Is there hope on the horizon with the medicines like molnupiravir?
Yeah, it's quite well known that vaccines, they're less effective in the immunocompromised people than those with fully functional immune systems. Being immunocompromised is a bit of a sliding scale, though, and some will respond to the vaccines quite well and others may not mount a very strong immune response at all. So in those cases, there are other options. There's passive immunity that can be good, and these are preformed antibodies. They're using monoclonal antibodies, cocktails of those as well, or immune plasma. But of course, these kind of treatments, they don't last. There's no immunological memory, so you have to readminister them as well. Antivirals, things, drugs that target the virus directly and stop it from replicating, making copies, not many of them. They're being developed, and you can use those in the absence of protective immunity as well. And the UK government here just now has signed a deal for two new antivirals. They're still yet to be approved. They've been repurposed from other antiviral drugs for influenza and even HIV. So I think it's looking good. 2 years out from the first cases of this new virus, we're starting to develop plenty of interventions for COVID. So I would say, yes, there's hope on the horizon. It might even be even closer than the horizon. I think it's probably surfing in on the next wave for us.
Nice to hear. Yeah, we're going down a similar path. As always, Professor Gary McLean, thank you very much for your time with us.
Oh, thanks very much, Jim. It's really, really nice to chat with you again, and very happy to be back on your show. I hope things are going well there in New Zealand.